We have what we think is the most interesting drama arranged for you, and our star is a most interesting and accomplished young lady. She made a name for herself in motion pictures, then she entered the field of radio, and you will undoubtedly remember her as Marge in the radio classic, Merton Marge. More recently, she's made an enviable reputation for herself as the producer-director of A Date with Judy. And here she is, petite and charming, our guest and star, Miss Helen Mack.
Well, about all I can say at this point, Les, is hello, everyone.
There are a few interesting facts about you that I'd like to talk about, Helen. How about a few moments after the play?
I'll be ready and waiting after the play.
Miss Helen Mack will join us backstage after the play, so be sure and stay with us. Now, curtain going up. Places, everyone. Curtain. The curtain is up, and here is the play.
Well, you couldn't miss him. He was head and shoulders above the rest of the crowd in the station. He was rather good looking, in spite of his horn-rimmed glasses. And he had enough books under his arm for an ambitious start on a 12-foot shelf. I took a deep breath, nice through the mob to his side, got a little piece of his arm that wasn't taken up with books, and led him to a taxi. There was something nice about him. A certain freshness. A clean kind of freshness. Well, we got into a cab, and after a series of O's and R's and gee whizzes every time we passed a building over two stories high, I got into Dame Meredith's office. As we opened the door, the Great Dane assumed his famous courtroom smile, the one the newspapers labeled the personality that saved a thousand necks.
Eric, my boy, you're a sight for these tired old eyes.
How do you do, sir?
Well, let me look at you, Eric. Yes, sir, image of your father when he and I were partners back in Sleepy Corners. Well, sit down, my boy.
Hope you didn't mind me coming to see you, sir.
Mind? I'm always tickled to see someone from the old hometown. Tell me, how are they treating the old bulletin back there?
Still the best paper in the state, sir.
Yes, sir. Your dad left a mighty fine newspaper when he died. Surprised you didn't follow the business.
No, Mr. Meredith. I want to be a great lawyer like you. You see, ever since I was a boy, I've heard about the great things you did. What a great man you are from Dad and everybody else in Sleepy Corners.
And, you'd like a job in my office?
Job? Oh, no, sir.
But your letter said you wanted to come to the city to see me about a job.
That's right, but not a job for me. A job for you.
A job for me?
Yes, sir. I'm on the committee for the State Independent Party. I submitted your name as a candidate on the strength of the bulletin backing you. Came to find out if you'd accept.
Accept the candidacy for what?
Well, I thought you knew, sir. For governor.
Governor? Oh.
Anything wrong, Miss Keene?
Oh, no, I just need a drink of water. A drink? Ooh, I should say I did need a drink. In fact, Dane Meredith took one, too. But after Eric had gone and Dane had a chance to let the idea wash around in his head, he said...
Dane Meredith, Governor. Governor Dane Meredith. Hey, Terry, that doesn't sound bad, does it?
I hope you're kidding, mister.
Kidding? Why should I be kidding?
Oh, think hard, Mr. Meredith, and a character by the name of Spider Miller will come to you.
What's Miller got to do with it?
Oh, now look, I'm your private secretary, remember me? I work here in this little office with you 40 hours a week.
So?
So, let one word leak out that you're tangled in with a racketeer like Spider Miller, and you couldn't get the nomination for street cleaner. And that's not all. For my hard-earned money, that wasn't a very brilliant suggestion. Telling Yokel Boy he could nail down his desk in the front office.
Oh, Terry, you're an alarmist.
Alarmist or not, I was scared. Because under that crop of straw-colored hair and that mail-order suit Eric Halliday wore, there was a lot of character. Plus more than a little dynamite if he ever found out a lot of things about his hero man. But Dane wouldn't listen. He let Eric take one of the desks in the big office outside while he toyed with the idea as to whether he wanted to make a try for the governorship. A whole week went by. And then, one noontime, when I was on my way to lunch, I happened to... No, that's a fib. I didn't just happen. I purposely went out of my way to go past Eric's desk. in the outside office.
Oh, hello, Miss Keene.
Well, hello, Eric. Are they still making you feel at home here in the office?
Everybody's been swell to me.
Good.
Only I wish Mr. Meredith would make up his mind. Folks back home are getting anxious.
Where do you think you're going?
Hey, what's going on over by the front door?
Somebody's excited about something.
Yeah, that fellow. Miss Keene, look, what? He's forcing his way in, and he's got a gun. Come on.
Oh, Eric. Eric, wait. Come back.
Just a minute, mister. You can't come barging in here. What do you want?
Get out of my way. I'm going to kill the rat who framed my son and send him to the death house.
Framed your son? Who framed your son?
Meredith. What do you think? A no-good crook.
The man may as well have slapped Eric across the mouth, because Eric stiffened, then brought back his fist and planted it with a dull thud against the man's jaw. The man staggered backwards, dropped the gun, cheated a moment, and then slumped to the floor. I didn't wait for any more. I grabbed Eric's arm, swept his hat off the rack, slapped it on his head, and let him out the door. Oh, I didn't answer any of his questions until we were seated in one of the little booths in the restaurant around the corner.
Now, why did you rush me out of the office and leave him there?
Because I didn't want you to get hurt. The boys in the office will take care of him now.
He must have been crazy. Those things he said about Mr. Meredith, framing his son, sending him to the death house.
No, Eric, he isn't crazy, except with grief. His name is Frank Rapp, and Dane did send his son to the death house. Finished testimony against him, he's there now.
Well, then he must have been guilty. Mr. Meredith would never send an innocent man there.
Eric, why don't you pack all those law books of yours and go home?
Go home? Well, I haven't got Mr. Meredith's answer yet.
Well, let him send it to you. You'll only get hurt staying here. I tried to tell him, but, well, the words just wouldn't come. Well, you can't tell a child that there isn't any Santa Claus, can you? Especially when it's someone you like an awful lot, like I... Well, I just didn't say anything. I didn't have long to wait for the next development. I met Eric in the front office the next morning, and he told me that Dane had finally given him his answer. He was accepting the offer to run for governor. I didn't say a word. I just turned and walked into Dane's office.
Well, good morning, Terry.
Dane, I just spoke to Eric. Is it true that you've accepted the offer?
Uh-huh. I thought it over. Sort of like the idea of governing my own home state.
You can't do it, Dane. You can't do a rotten thing like that.
Rotten?
Eric's out there right now, pounding out reams of copy for his hometown paper. You can't do it to him, Dane. If he finds out the truth about you, it'll break his heart.
Speaking of hearts, are you sure yours isn't mixed up in it someplace?
That's beside the point. I saw him walk up to a man who had a gun. That man was coming in here to kill you. At the risk of his own life, he stopped that man. You just can't do this rotten thing to him.
Take it easy, Terry.
I won't take it easy. You're in cahoots with a dirty crook.
Keep quiet, Terry.
You're on his payroll. And if you become governor, you'll still take his filthy money.
I said shut up! Oh. I'm sorry, Terry. I didn't mean that slap.
You don't have to apologize, Mr. Meredith. Just see that you send my paycheck to the right address. That'll be for 5 days as of today.
Now, Terry, wait a minute. There's no sense in your walking out like this. I admit I lost my head for a second there, but... Well, you said some pretty strong things. Got me pretty mad.
Funny. You got me pretty mad, too.
But, Terry...
Don't worry. I've said all I'm going to say. What happens behind these doors stays here.
Now, maybe if you take a few weeks off...
Goodbye, Mr. Meredith. Just be careful when that pedestal he has you up on starts to topple. I thought when I walked out of Dane Meredith's office that day that I had closed the door on the whole rotten business. Oh, but how wrong I was. You see, Eric dug my address out of the files at the office. And one evening, I found him standing at my door ringing the bell. After that, we had dinner several times. Oh, he talked about nothing but how Meredith's campaign was developing. There was even talk of the great Dane being endorsed by one of the major parties. Meantime, Eric was undergoing a change. He just wasn't any longer the yokel boy who gawked at tall buildings. But when the crash came, he was still going to be hurt. At first, I thought he was seeing me because he just wanted someone who lived and breathed to talk to. But after he groped for my hand in the movies a few times and held it tight, I started to wonder. And then one night...
Would you mind terribly if I put my arms around you and kissed you, Terry?
Oh, well, I wouldn't mind, but...
Oh, it's perfectly all right, Terry. You see, I love you, and... Well, as soon as we get Mr. Meredith elected, I want you to be my wife.
Oh, Eric. Happiness hinged on the one thing I didn't want to happen. But sooner or later, Eric had to find out the truth about Dame Meredith. And when he did, well, it wasn't going to be very pleasant. On the other hand, I couldn't tell Eric, because I had an idea what he'd do. And a certain character named Spider Miller wouldn't exactly like his method of procedure. Then, in the midst of my dilemma, it happened. Late the next Saturday afternoon, I got a call from Eric. He sounded excited and said he'd be right over.
Terry, something happened this afternoon. I'm all mixed up inside. You've got to help me. Help straighten me out.
Oh, certainly, Eric. Suppose first you tell me what happened this afternoon.
Well, this afternoon being Saturday, the rest of the staff was away. I was busy working on some campaign blurbs for the paper when Mr. Meredith came in. He asked me if I would type a few important letters for him that had to go out before Monday. I said, sure, and use your old typewriter in his office. I was typing away...
Mr. Meredith?
Yes?
My name's Welch, Freddy Welch. Maybe you heard of me as the Weasel.
The Weasel?
Yeah. Spider Miller sent me.
Eric.
Yes, Mr. Meredith?
Better take those letters outside and finish them.
So I took the letters and went outside. In a little while, this Welch fella came out and hurried away. You see, I'd been waiting because there was an address on one of the letters that I had asked Mr. Meredith about.
So you went back into his office?
Yes, and I guess I must have surprised him because he tried to cover the bundles of money he had on his desk.
Money?
Must have been $50,000. I couldn't help but remark about it. It was so much.
What did he say?
Told me it was counterfeit. That he was holding it as evidence for the client who had just left.
The man named Welch?
Yes, he asked me to forget about it because it was a very important case he was working on for the government. Well, I got the address straightened out and went back outside, and in a few minutes, Mr. Meredith left.
What happened to the letters?
He said to put them on his desk, that he'd be back later to sign them.
And did you?
Yes, I took them into his office. But as I was about to leave, I discovered an empty money wrapper on the floor. Same as the ones on those bundles of money he had on his desk. I don't know why I picked it up, just nosy, I guess. When I did, I got a terrific shock.
A shock? Why?
It was a wrapper from a bundle of money from the Parkside Bank.
The Parkside Bank?
The bank that was held up this morning and robbed of $50,000.
Books. Eric, that doesn't prove anything.
But it does. You've seen the evening papers? Here, look at it.
I see. Fred Welch, alias the Weasel, was picked up this afternoon as number one suspect in the Parkside Bank robbery. Dane Meredith, ace criminal lawyer, has been retained as his attorney.
There's his picture, the same man who gave Mr. Meredith the money. It doesn't make sense, Terry. A man like Dane Meredith mixed up in something like this. That's why I had to come here to you. Now tell me the truth. That's why you quit, isn't it? It was because you found out something dishonest about it.
Eric, I tried so hard to warn you. I didn't want this to happen.
Terry, I've got to know the truth. I can't let him go ahead and be governor if there's anything crooked about it.
I can't tell you anything, Eric. That would be betraying a trust. What's more important, there's someone else in this thing besides Dane. Someone who won't stop at closing my mouth and yours permanently.
Then you won't tell me what you know.
I can't, Eric.
Okay.
Oh, Eric, please try to understand.
I think I do understand. Protecting Dane Meredith means more to you than keeping me from being a fool.
Oh, no.
Well, I know someone who will tell me.
You do?
A man named Frank Rapp. I'll take him to the district attorney with me, with this money wrapper.
I couldn't stop him. Nobody could stop him. He just swung open the door and was gone. I threw on my coat and rushed after him. I tried to get to Frank Rapp's house first, because I knew Eric was walking right smack into a truckload of TNT. Rapp had only been sitting back waiting for someone to come along with some tangible evidence to make the DA listen to his story about his son. And now Eric had that necessary evidence in that Parkside Bank money wrapper. But Eric got to Rapp's house first. I saw him step out of his cab as my cab turned the corner. Oh, I saw something else, too. A long, black, underslung limousine that had Spider Miller written all over it moved in the shadows and stopped directly behind Eric's cab. As the cab pulled away, two men slipped from the black car. One of them pulled something out of his pocket and crashed it down on Eric's head. I was too far away to even yell a warning. The two men stuffed Eric into the back of the black limousine and shot away from the curb into the darkness.
Hey, lady, did you see what I saw? That there was a snatch.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe we ought to better call the cops.
No, not if you want to be around to blow out the candles on your next birthday cake.
Huh?
Turn your cab around and take me to the Commodore Arms apartment, but fast.
Yes, ma'am.
Terry, come in. Well, this is a surprise and a pleasant one.
Thanks, Dane.
Let me have your coat.
No, I won't be here that long. Dane, Spider Miller has Eric.
Miller? Eric? What are you talking about?
I'm going to talk fast, Dane, so listen. A man named Welch came to see you this afternoon. He gave you $50,000 that he stole from the Parkside Bank. Miller sent him to you to cover for him.
I don't know what you're talking about, Terry.
Oh, no, it won't work, Dane. You foolishly let Eric get a hold of a wrapper off one of the bundles of that stolen money.
What?
He showed me the wrapper. Might still have Welch's fingerprints on it. Because Eric's been very careful how he handled that precious little piece of paper. A little while ago, he left me to pick up Frank Rapp.
Oh, he must be insane.
No. No, Dane. Just disillusioned. Dane, you've got to do something.
Do something? Me? Why should I? He was trying to hang me, wasn't he?
But he didn't come here with that intention, Dane. He came here to make you governor of his state. He thought you were that great. Now you're going to stand by and watch him murdered.
You're wasting your breath, Terry. I'm not crazy enough to buck Miller and his mob, even if I wanted to.
Not even for the son of your best friend.
I'm sorry, Terry. It won't work. Now, if you don't mind, I'm tired. I'll show you to the door. Sorry to rush you out like this, Terry. Good night.
Good night, Dane. And thanks.
What was the kiss and the thanks for?
Oh, for what you're going to do. Good night. I went downstairs. The cab driver was still waiting. In a few minutes, Dane Meredith in his familiar pearl gray hat and long camel's hair coat came out. He walked briskly in the other direction to the corner and hailed a taxicab. I told my cabbie to follow him. He drove across town, turned a few times, and then headed straight for the river. All right, cabbie, let me out.
Lady, I was never happy to get rid of anybody.
Oh, but you're not rid of me. Here, take this $5. Keep it.
Gee, thanks.
Oh, wait a minute. You aren't finished. Now, look, drive to the nearest telephone and call the police.
Did you say police?
I said police. Tell them to come to that big boathouse over there where that man in the camel's hair coat went into. The address is 400 West River. Now, hurry.
Yes, ma'am.
As the cab sped away, I crossed the road to the boathouse. I knew the place all right. It belonged to Spider Miller. I delivered several important packages to him there. Packages that Dane Meredith wouldn't entrust to anyone else. There was a boarded window on the far side of the tired-looking building. I could see a sliver of yellow light was shining from inside. I got to the window and peeked in, just as Dane was entering the room.
Well, if it ain't the governor himself in person. What are you doing in a dump like this in a this hour of the night, Your Honor?
Where is he, Miller?
Where's who?
The kid you picked up in front of Frank Rapp's house.
I thought this was a social visit, Governor.
What are you going to do with him?
Let him tell his story to the fish instead of the DA.
That's not necessary. I can handle him without any rough stuff.
Oh, yeah? You can handle him, eh? Is that why he was going to see Rapp? Is that the reason he was going to take Rapp to see the DA with the money wrapper he picked up in your office? Snap out of it, Meredith. I happen to be Spider Miller. and the guy who dug you out of the gutter and pinned that Great Dane tag on you. Now go home and sleep it off. I'm handling this my way.
I'm not leaving without the kid, Miller.
Look, Meredith, you know better than to argue. I get mad when people don't do what I say.
Funny. So do I. Now, where is he?
Hey, look out, Spider. He's got a gun.
Shut up. You think I'm blind?
I hate to use this, Miller, but I promise you I will if I have to. Now, where is he?
In the next room. Through that door.
You.
Me?
Yeah, open that door for me.
Yes, sir. Nice shooting, Spider.
See, that's the trouble with you amateurs, Meredith. You never want to turn your head till you make sure the other guy ain't got a gun, too.
And you pros ought to make sure that the other guy's dropped his gun before you lower yours. You.
Yes, sir.
If you don't want the same thing, get the kid out of the next room.
Yes, sir.
As Miller Stooge turned toward the next room where Eric was being held, I heard the wail of a siren in the distance. I took a last glimpse through the boarded window just in time to see Dane drop his gun and fall to the floor. I ran around to the front entrance as the police cars rolled to a halt. Blue coat spilled out onto the roadway. In a moment, we were inside. Dane. Oh, Dane.
Hello, Terry.
You're badly hurt.
Yeah. Miller always was pretty good with a 38.
Jerry.
Eric.
Hello, Eric.
I heard the whole thing, Mr. Meredith, in the next room.
A little bit like Dick Tracy, wasn't it?
You were swell. But better not try to talk anymore, Mr. Meredith. We'll get you to a hospital right away.
Hospital? That's a waste of time. I'm all done for.
Oh, no. No, you're not, Dane. You're going to be all right.
Terry, I just want you and Eric to know that was an awful big pattern you tried to fit me into.
You fit, Mr. Meredith. Even overlap the pattern a little. You're the greatest man I've ever known.
Well, thanks, Eric.
Oh, Dane. Dane. Oh, Dane.
No use, Terry. Not now.
I don't know. Now that I've had time to think it all over, I guess maybe it's better it happened that way. If Dane had lived, he would have only been in for a lot of disgrace. This way, he paid for his crimes, and the folks back in Sleepy Corners went right on thinking that he was a Great Dane. What? How do I know?
How do you think she knows? She lives here in Sleepy Corners. She's my wife.
Uh-huh. I married the guy, just like in the storybook.
Now, here's our director, Les Mitchell. And here's our star, Miss Helen Mack. As one director to another, Helen, I think you're a fine actress as well as an accomplished director.
Well, coming from another director, Les, I certainly appreciate a compliment like that.
It's a sincere one, believe me. Now let's talk about the real Helen Mack, not the director or the actress. What do you do for fun?
Well, I hate to admit it, but I don't have any exciting hobbies or unusual activities. I manage to keep pretty busy with my two sons, my radio work, and, of course, my husband.
Who is Tom McAvity, a very prominent radio executive.
Very prominent.
Well, that sounds like you wouldn't have too much idle time on your hands. By the way, you told me a rather cute story about your oldest boy and his reaction to his mother as an actress. I think our friends would be amused by it.
Oh, you mean about my taking him to see one of my pictures?
That's right.
Well, once in a while, when one of my old pictures is playing around in the neighborhood, I take Johnny to see it. And this particular time, I asked him how he liked it. And he, with the typical frankness of the young, replied, "Well, you're pretty good, Mother, but I really go for that Lana Turner."
And that took care of that.
Oh, it certainly did.
Helen, it was great to have you on our show. Thank you for a fine performance.
Thank you, Les. I always love acting. But before I go, I would like to compliment Frank Martin and the rest of the cast. Now, good night, everyone.
Goodbye, Miss Helen Mack.
Miss Helen Mack was supported by an all-star cast. Frank Martin as Eric, Marvin Miller as Dane, Ira Grissel as Rap, Harry Lang as the cabbie, Joe Forte as Miller. The Great Dane was written by Martin Ryerson, produced and directed by Les Mitchell, who is here also as your host.
Thank you for being our guest, and we hope you'll be with us again next week.
Musical score was composed and conducted by Del Castillo. Be sure to listen each week and hear such stars as Thomas Mitchell, Anita Louise, and many other great actors and great stories selected especially for them. And that's the Del speaking.